Welcome to They'll Be Fine.
We're your hosts, Kim Heckman
and Lisa Pagano.
You've probably heard it before. They're smart. They're gifted. They'll be fine. But what if that's not always true?
In this podcast, we'll explore the surprising struggles that many gifted students face that lead to underachievement, as well as discuss practical strategies to help these brilliant minds reach their full potential.
Because they deserve better than just being fine. Let's give them what they really need to thrive and succeed.
Welcome back to another episode of They'll Be Fine. With the right tools and support, gifted kids can do amazing things. Today, we're tackling a topic that can feel a bit intimidating when teaching gifted students, math. Well known by its acronym AOPS, Art of Problem Solving has a cult following, and I'm one of the members for sure, having used it for over 15 years. Grayson Mass is here to explain how this program has a unique approach to teaching math, focusing not on rote memorization, but on deep conceptual understanding and creative problem solving. It's a curriculum that challenges students to think outside of the box and build a true foundation in problem solving. I am a huge fan of AOPS, and you'll hear that passion in this conversation with Grayson Mass. We hope you enjoy. Lisa to Taylor Swift is Kim to Art of Problem Solving.
Whoa. Okay, now that's big. That's huge, right?
Literally. So Art of Problem Solving has been my favorite math curriculum. Like, I've used it for 15 years. I first discovered it back when my kids were very young. I was looking for a supplemental. They were like 7, 6, and 4. So I found Beast Academy. And I can't tell you, it's changed their life. I truly believe that they look at math now different than I've ever seen any of my students. They look at it from that problem-solving perspective. On top of that, they solve problems efficiently. They solve things creatively, so it becomes fun. And my kids went on to do the Math Olympiad and the Math Counts competitions because they loved the problem-solving part of it. My son just did Governor's School for math. My daughter is 15 and she started a math club at her high school because she wants to continue to solve problems like math counts. It's fun for her. It's hard to explain this to a lot of people, but I told her who I was interviewing today and she was like, oh my gosh, mom, can you please thank everybody at Art of Problem Solving because they are my heroes. And she wants me to ask Richard Rusick, he's the founder. How did he get the idea to create this curriculum? Because there really has not been anything else out there that's like this.
Yeah. So Richard, one of my favorite mentors, really, it's been just a real joy to work with him over the years. When he was growing up in Alabama, he was one of these very naturally bright students where a lot of subjects, but math in particular, came quite easy to him, including math as it's stereotypically thought of, right? Like computational math, being really good at memorizing a lot of facts, answering problems quickly, following procedures, arriving at the correct answer, and then moving on. And his experience in math was such that that's all there is to see here. And he was so good at math that he was invited to some prestigious math camps and other opportunities where he would be alongside other very bright students. And when he got to some of these camps, he realized that, wow, maybe he's not the smartest person in the room anymore. And he got exactly, I think in his words, if I'm remembering correctly, 0 problems correct that he was given. And so he went back to the well after that experience and was like, all right, this means I need to memorize more. I need to practice a lot more. And then got invited back to this particular camp and got exactly 0 problems correct again. And he was asking himself, what is it that I'm doing wrong, really? Like, why is it that I'm not doing well in the subject that I thought I was very, very, very good at? And he realized that it's because the approach was what needed tweaking. And really, I would say probably a complete overhaul is that he was memorizing as much as he could, but he wasn't fundamentally or conceptually understanding more. And so he did away with that old guard approach, which is very consistent with the way that a lot of people traditionally might think of math because that's their experience. with mathematics. This is how it's still taught in a lot of places, that it's something that is highly rote, procedural, a heavy reliance on memorization and algorithmic learning, and not really doing so much with regard to conceptual understanding. And so he got connected with some mentors of his own that taught him a different approach. In other words, a problem-solving based approach to mathematics, where you have to memorize less, but kind of like understand the language of math at a deeper, more foundational level, such that you can be given a problem that you've never seen before. And instead of shying away from it and saying, I don't know how to solve that, no one's ever taught me, instead, students who have a problem-solving approach can look at that and say, I think I can figure it out, even if I can't figure it out right away. And so when he got to Princeton, he pretty early on got connected with some like-minded peers, and they decided that they wanted to write a textbook about this because they felt that this was missing, really, from the world. In other words, a problem-solving-based approach to mathematics and mathematical understanding. And The Art of Problem Solving, Volume 1 was born. So this is back in the early 90s. Volume 1 turned into Volume 2. And then it developed a little bit of a kind of like a cult following, I would say, but still nothing near to the scale that we see students using and engaging with Art of Problem Solving today. And Richard went away from that for a while because, as a lot of students who are very bright with math and very good with numbers might do, they can find their way into the world of quantitative trading. And he went onto Wall Street for a number of years and did well, but realized this isn't my passion. This isn't my vocation. This isn't my purpose. And decided in the early 2000s that maybe he should go back to that directly, back to the source. And Art of Problem Solving as an organization was born. So that was 2003. And we've had quite a wild ride since then. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm thankful that he realized what his purpose was, because math became fun for my kids. And those that are listening to the program are interested in gifted education. And what I find is gifted students have an enormous capacity for memorization. And so they do well in math. But what I've seen is they're not necessarily enjoying what they're doing. They can get the hundreds on the test, but really also what we're speaking to, you're missing the point of math. And that is to problem solve and understand the concepts. It's not just to get solutions. Were you all shocked by the success of it?
In some ways, yes. And in some ways, no. I think to a degree, we've seen kind of slow and steady growth, appreciation, uptake, what have you, through the years. Like around the 2010 time, that was a moment that I think you start to see a little bit of a shift as well. But then I would actually say that things really accelerated a lot during the pandemic. And that's because it's something that we've been building where we finally had an opportunity to show the world what we could do and really help in that time of like real peril for a lot of students in schools, where suddenly everyone had to be moved to online learning, whether that was good for them or not. It's just the world that we lived in a few years ago. And suddenly we had a shot to show the world what we're made of, because we had been thinking deeply about quality online experiences long before other companies were doing so. And artofproblemsolving.com predates Facebook even. And so in those early years, we were developing online learning opportunities and courses for a lot of students, really where we were planting a flag and saying, hey, are you someone who really enjoys math? Do you really like thinking deeply and differently about mathematics? Are you perhaps not getting the experience that you would perhaps like to get in school? Come here, we're your tribe, we've got your back. And so we had been building and iterating and polishing our pedagogical approach, the courses that we offer, our techniques, all of those things for years and years and years. So when 2020 hit, so many people who may have kind of knew about us on the periphery, or maybe they had heard about us but never really tried us, suddenly it was an opportunity for them to do just that. And we found that we were able to really connect with so many more students, so many more families for whom this was not only an option, I would say, that seemed to meet them where they are, but something that really sticks. So I'm a big fan of calling quality educational experiences sticky. And I believe that we teach in a way that is sticky. And so what I mean by that is when you are breaking things down and showing students an approach to understanding math at a conceptual level, the math becomes theirs instead of a fact that is taught to them by someone else that they either have to just take at face value or memorize, right? But when you learn in that way, your knowledge and content acquisition is only as good as how many facts you can keep in your mind. But when the knowledge becomes yours because you're uncovering these truths, you're uncovering a path to a solution that you created, it sticks with you. And that's what allows for a more robust foundation to be had. And then from that foundation, you can build and grow and build and grow. So we're very grateful for that opportunity where we could help so many. And now to this day, help many more that I would say, like, if I'm speaking honestly, like back in those early days of Art of Problem Solving, I think all of us would be like, wow, we've really done something here. But in so many ways, because of that, now that we know what's possible, in some ways, it almost feels like it's really just like the beginning.
Yeah.
And we have a lot more in front of us.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, because you realize now the potential. Will you just give our listeners an introduction to all of your resources? So we've mentioned the online classes and we've mentioned Beast Academy, but books like Counting and Probability, you have a lot of different curriculum that I found as a teacher, it supplemented the standards and were so integral to statistics and other subjects that they were going to encounter. So from kindergarten up, just all the things that you guys provide.
Absolutely. So highest level whirlwind tour through what we do. We make a variety of really engaging and I'm proud to say very high quality educational resources. In grades 1 through 12, with a specific emphasis in mathematics, although we do some other things, including a full suite of textbooks, print and digital, starting with our elementary math curriculum, Beast Academy, and then moving all the way through the core Art of Problem Solving materials, which range from pre-algebra to calculus, plus a number of other subjects that you wouldn't typically find in schools, or I should say most schools. So discrete math, counting and probability, number theory, things like this, including a suite of math contest and math competition preparation materials as well. We also now have two accredited, nationally accredited online schools where students can come and take a la carte course in anything from Beast Academy level 3 to an advanced pre-calculus class or even like group theory or something like this. And then we also have a fast-growing network of in-person learning centers as well. We now have 22 of them. And I remember when we were first endeavoring to get to really add that to our menu of offerings, if you will, the in-person learning experience, Morrisville, North Carolina was actually our first learning center. And that was 2016.
That's incredible. I didn't know that was the first one.
That was the first one. And we have 9 of them in California. That's where Art of Problem Solving is headquartered. 13 more scattered all over the rest of the country. And we have pretty big ambitions for what this model can be. We think that we can have potentially several hundred of these learning centers because we just believe that there's such a need out there for what we're doing. So sometimes when we're first introducing to a community what an Art of Problem Solving Academy is, and for those who have never heard of us or they're not familiar with us, the common kind of perception would be that, oh, this is an after-school math tutoring center to which the parent of a bright student who we believe would do so well with us, they might think, oh, my son or daughter already gets A's and B's in math. So, you know, we don't need this, right? Like they don't need to come to a learning center so they can do better on their tests. They're already doing well there. To which we would reply, you misunderstand. Because they're getting A's in math, that's why they need to come with us. Because we're really about raising student ceilings, showing them a different experience in mathematics, one where they're going to engage in creative reasoning, critical thinking, problem solving, logic, building connections that they may have never thought were possible in mathematics, and then really being surrounded by a community of like-minded peers that can support and push each other to grow in a number of very exciting ways. So we're extremely, extremely excited about what we're building here. And those first couple of years back in 2016, 2017, that was really like our proof of concept. Those were our proof of concept years where we wanted to see if we could deliver the same kinds of experiences to students that we'd been doing for years and years online, to do that in person. And now when you zoom all the way out, one of the things, just as an educator myself, that I appreciate about what we're doing and the way that we engage with students is that it doesn't matter what learning style or preference that you may have as a student, whether you're a tactile learner, whether you're a visual learner, whether you're an auditory learner, whether you're someone that does well with a digital interactive environment, or whether you're someone who does really, really well working with other human beings in real time, we have an experience in AOPS for you. That to me is and has been very, very important.
Yeah. That's amazing. You were listing off some skill sets that they get through auto problem solving that's not math based. So I'm a gifted education teacher, and there is definitely a misconception that we just sit around and do puzzles with our students. And I'm trying to do my best to communicate that puzzles are important. It directly connects to test-taking skills. There's so many other skills that you can get from doing a curriculum that focuses more on problem-based. So like when you teach math, you're teaching in units. We are on the multiplication unit. We're on the double-digit subtraction unit, right? And it compartmentalizes these things for students. Well, when you give them a math Olympiad problem or anything that's in like the Beast Academy book, it allows them to pull all of their knowledge in to solve it. It's not just within a unit.
Yes, we believe at the end of the day, actually, that what we're doing, even though for those that know us for our math, I mentioned earlier that we are very math centric. We also do some things in computer science and physics and chemistry, and our learning centers actually have a lot of problem-solving focused language arts experiences as well. But it really begins with math. Like math is like the trunk of the tree. And then, you know, you can visualize these other branches that come out of it. And we believe that math is the trunk and the foundation because that is the best and most efficient route to teaching students the problem-solving skill set. So at the end of the day, what we believe we're doing is actually teaching problem solving. We're just doing it through the vehicle of mathematics. And the reason that's so important and really has been forever, I would say that is the moment that we're in now, right? Like the way that I look at a lot of, let's say, traditionally structured core curricula is that it's almost as if the generation of that content and those lessons, that has all been made for a world that is soon to leave us, right? With the advent of artificial intelligence, fast content knowledge acquisition is going to be so ubiquitous that I feel that we're already here, but I would say that increasingly so, we are no longer doing right by students if we are just teaching them a bunch of facts that they are then meant to regurgitate on some kind of standardized assessment to determine how well they quote unquote know something and then move on to learning or memorizing the next set of facts. In this fast-paced, technologically laden AI world, right? And I don't mean to be dystopian there, but like this technology is not going anywhere. What is it that we can give to students? What can we impart to them that is really going to give them the skills and the confidence to confidently navigate the world that they're about to inherit? That's the purpose of education. If you were to ask me like, hey, what does education mean, right? I would say just that, right? When you look back on that and you say, how can we do right by the kids? What skills can we give them? More so than any other thing, we believe that problem solving is what we need. And because if you're a problem solver, you can be faced really with any challenge, any problem that doesn't have a predefined set of steps or procedures that you would need to follow in order to arrive at a successful conclusion, an answer, whatever it might be. The problem solver will kind of sit with it and say, well, let me think about this. And having the confidence, the perseverance, the grit to be able to navigate their way out of it. That is a skill that will never go out of vogue. It will never not be in fashion. And if anything, there will be an increased importance placed on the problem solvers of the world relative to those who don't have that skill set. And so again, if we bring it all back, we believe that mathematics as a discipline is really something that you can deliver to students from a very young age and start to gradually introduce this concept of deductive reasoning, logic, puzzles. We're very big on our puzzles, as you mentioned earlier, but doing so in a very thoughtful way, where let's say we're working with a third grader and maybe they've just learned computational multiplication. So it's important to go through those foundations. You can't get to higher order problem solving without having some kind of foundation there. And once we believe that students know how to multiply single digit numbers, two digit numbers together, we will then show them a multiplication puzzle where knowledge of how to multiply two numbers together will help you to solve that puzzle, but knowledge of multiplication alone will not be sufficient. You're going to have to ask yourself things like, where should I start? And what would happen to this portion of the puzzle if I go here first versus what if I approached it from this angle? And so the extrapolation from that is very natural. I mean, this is something that can be applied not only in mathematics. It really transcends subjects in school. I would even say it transcends school itself.
I'm so glad you brought up the fact that you have different areas that you've opened art of problem solving to. And I agree with you about math being that kind of foundation, which is so exciting to me because I think I was raised in the kind of the school of thought of what do you do with math? Like some people major in it and you can maybe go on like Richard did and use it, but few people want to go into a math career. What is that movie where the three women in mathematics work at NASA back in the 60s?
Hidden Figures, is it?
Hidden Figures, yes.
Yeah,
you know that scene where all of a sudden they come to her and they're like, we have a problem. We're not going to be able to land this. And she had all the calculations of what was supposed to happen. And now things have changed and she's doing things in real time to calculate. That is what we want our students to be prepared for and have the skill set for.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So again, it's like, it's bigger than math, right? That's why we've chosen to name our, not that we would have, but not name our company, The Art of Mathematics. Instead, it's The Art of Problem Solving. It's that it really is about that, right? That students can, that you are curious, that you want to sit with something that's challenging, to almost actually really love to learn the challenge and start to love to learn the kinds of problems where when you see them at first, you don't know how to solve it because it's an indicator that it's a problem worthy of your time. So not only do we help students become problem solvers, but there's a lot of that implicit learning baked in. One of my favorite ways of demonstrating to people what a problem solving based approach to mathematics looks like. And I always think of the analogy of like baking a cake, right? So let's say I've never baked a cake before, and today I want to do that. And I would pull out The Joy of Cooking or Julia Child's baking book or something like this. And what would I do? Flip to the chocolate cake section, and it would tell me, okay, I need this number of eggs, this much flour, this much sugar, what have you. Okay, I get all of that set up. And then it would tell me, okay, mix these ingredients together in these amounts and grease these pans, preheat the oven to this temperature, step, step, step. And at the end of that process, I'll get my cake. Maybe it's not the best looking cake in the world if it's my first cake, but I'll get my cake, right? I get my answer. But most importantly, I never had to think. I never had to think once. I'm just following steps as they've been outlined to me. And this is what we believe we're offering, a different experience in math, because the traditional experience in math is really a not, it's not a lot different from that, right? It's like, here's a problem. Learn how to identify problems that look like this. Here are the steps you need to take to solve said problem, arrive at your answer, and move on. And so instead, like if you bring it back to the cake analogy, you know, what would happen if cut your flour in half? Or what if you didn't use eggs at all? There's a lot of like deeper understanding that allows you to be a better chef or a better baker and be creative with things. what we're allowing students to do is to become that better chef, that better baker, because they deeply understand all the ingredients and what they do so that they can experiment with things and create novel, delicious creations rather than just only knowing how to make things that have a predefined recipe that they have to follow.
I love that. I love the emphasis on problem solving, because let's face it, in this world, there's no shortage of problems. We want kids to be able to creatively approach and solve them in different ways. And I just love what you've described through art of problem solving. You also talked about the importance of challenging kids and like making sure they face those challenges early on. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of that productive struggle and how art of problem solving encourages students to embrace and learn from failure instead of shutting down and becoming frustrated?
Absolutely. I couldn't be more of a proponent, really, of the concept of productive struggle. First of all, it depends on what word you're keying in on there. Sometimes people look at that struggle word and it feels like it's a little intimidating. But we choose to look at the first word, the productive word. That means that there's something you can grow from this, right? And good things are hard. Things that are worth doing, they're going to be challenging, right? And so what we believe is really necessary and good for all students is to become comfortable with the idea that, you know, that you will face challenge, right? You're going to face challenge in school. You're going to face challenge in college. You're going to face challenge when you get out of school. Challenge is all around us. And so it's not about learning how to avoid challenge because it feels psychologically intimidating to us. It's about embracing that it is all around us and that you can confidently get your way through it, no matter what that challenge is. So going back to mathematics, we feel that it's a very efficient route towards teaching students how to navigate a productive struggle and then to really excel and succeed in that realm. And in particular, a lot of the students that we work with in and out of schools, labels aside, let's say students that are highly capable, high ability, gifted and talented students, things of this nature, a lot of them, if they don't get the right experience in mathematics early on, they might not have the wonderful opportunity to engage with productive struggle because everything comes easy to them, right? And I think that one of the other things that happens there is that very young students can tend to build an identity in and around mathematics, or even in school more broadly, where what it means to be smart is to not be challenged, right? To get everything right, to be a fast finisher, to not have any difficulty in it. And instead, what we would prefer to do there is really disavow those students of that notion and give them something that is more challenging, that they're not going to know how to solve right away when they look at it. And to be honest, for the student who is encountering that different approach to school and to learning for the first time, it can be a little intimidating, but that's another aspect of who we are and what we do that we find so really meaningful, is that we like to mentor and guide and coach students through that. It's not productive to give very difficult problems to students just for the sake of being difficult. The problems have to be meaningful. They have to build skills above and beyond whatever computational process or set of things that the lesson needs to be about. And it's really that skill that's important. And it's important for students to learn that early on. There are so many stories out there, I would say, of students who don't have an experience to engage in challenge meaningfully when they are younger. And their experience might be that this comes easy to me. This is how I know I'm good at it because everything is easy. And then they might get to, let's say, a prestigious university like MIT or Princeton, and they choose to major in math. And things are going to look and feel a little bit different when they get there if they weren't challenged in high school. And then maybe this student gets a 70 on an exam for the first time in their life. And if that student has never encountered challenge or experienced challenge prior to that experience, they may internalize that as, maybe I'm not as smart as I thought I was, and maybe I don't belong here, and maybe this isn't for me. When in fact, it is for them. They just should have encountered that productive struggle at 8 for the first time instead of 18.
And so sometimes we see people develop these negative attitudes towards math. Parents may have struggled in math as a kid, and so they kind of pass that attitude on to their children. How do we get kids to be excited about math and not scared of math? Like sometimes we hear, well, I'm just not a math person, right? For some reason, it's become acceptable in this society to say, I just don't do math. I'm not a math person. How do we break that before it even starts? Like, how do we get kids excited and motivated and just to develop that positive mindset around math? And I can do math and we're all math people.
Absolutely. I love that question. I think that is the unlock here, like just across the board that we're striving for. I swear I'm not trying to be overly promotional here with this, but truly for any of those listening, our Beast Academy, this is our elementary math curriculum. We really built this with so much care, love, and attention to that exact problem that we wanted to give students an experience in math that helped build critical thinking, problem solving, and creative reasoning skills. We wanted to do so in a way that allowed them to be more accepting of mathematics, but really learning to love mathematics. And I believe the secret sauce there is in the way that it's presented, right? So it's not the formulaic recipe that we just talked about, like a uninspiring black and white cookbook style approach. Instead, our textbooks in Beast Academy look nothing like textbooks at all. They are graphic novels, and so they are bright, they are colorful, they are exciting. They have very interesting and lovable characters that each have different personalities and different ways of approaching and solving problems. This is really a nod to meeting young students where they are naturally and inherently very creative and imaginative. And so we're inviting them into this imaginary world where they can follow along this mathematical journey with these characters who are using and encountering and discussing mathematics in novel and interesting ways, encountering non-routine problems that don't have a cookie cutter path to solution. And so it's really that combo approach of introducing this different kind of math that, as we've been discussing for the majority of the hour here, that we believe is so beneficial to building skills that are relevant for tomorrow, but doing so in a way that is exciting and palatable to young learners. So there's so many things that I love about the approach. So there are four main characters in this story. And as I said, they have different personalities and different ways of solving problems. And there's a lot of implicit learning that happens there. And importantly, these characters will try different strategies and they will get things wrong quite a bit. So the implicit message there to students is that it's okay to get things wrong. In fact, we expect you to, right? This is part of the journey of building and growing, is that you're not going to know how to do everything right away. In fact, you might try to solve a problem six different ways and have all six of those ways not end up in a solution that works, but then you'll try it a seventh way and then it does. So it's the persistence and the perseverance is kind of baked in by way of example of showing students through like a narrative approach how it is that you can think about math and do math differently.
Yeah, I love it. It's almost like a Sesame Street feel where the characters come alongside the student's developmental level and play with the numbers like you're saying. So it's not as intimidating. I don't know if you've heard this comedian before. I love him so much. He has a line that says, a lot of people feel for your country, you can go fight and that's honorable for your country. And he says, you can also do math. Do math for your country. I feel like we will be a stronger country if we can improve the mathematics in every single citizen. And I know that seems extremist, but there is a state of crisis here in America. And you look at other countries and they're doing math at a higher level, more proficiently. And I don't know if you could speak to that. You know, what could we be doing to change here in America that maybe can rival, you know, Singapore and some other countries that are doing it so well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that if I'm looking at some of the, like, the most recent, like, PISA rankings, the United States is somewhere in like the 20s, or it could be sometime as dip as low as into the 30s and things like that. And the educators in the room, when we look at these things, we're like, how could this be, right? We have the resources, we have the people who care. We have all the raw ingredients to be able to really cultivate successful, lasting outcomes for students. And yet, if you take a look at some, and these are standardized assessments, so take everything with a grain of salt, right? But it is an indicator, right? It is an indicator that there's a lot of room for growth. Now, interestingly, so when I look at the PISA rankings, I look at that and I think, okay, well, this is something that is really a measure of kind of like what's happening day to day with, let's say, a representative sample of students across the country. But when you look at some of the highest profile math competitions, the United States is near the very top in the world. So specifically, I'm referring to the International Math Olympiad. Actually, this just wrapped up. The most recent iteration of this wrapped up in Sunshine Coast, Australia, just a few months ago in July. And the United States as a team took home silver in that event, competing against dozens of other countries on extraordinarily challenging proof-based problems. So this is, for those who aren't familiar, every country will send their top six students to go and compete against every other country's top six students on some of these very, very challenging problems. Scores get tallied at the end, and then the highest score wins gold, and then silver and bronze, and so on and so forth. If you go back to 2015, the United States has won gold at this event a handful of times over the last 10 or so years. So we're always like trading places with China, right there at the top. And so just knowing those two things, how is it possible that the United States could be winning gold or silver at these events with some of the most challenging math? But then when it comes to, let's call it like everyday math, we're in the 20s or the 30s and things like that. And the answer, we're going to come back to a theme here, is problem solving. It has to do with the approach to mathematics, the way it's taught, the way it's introduced, and the kinds of problems that we're delivering to students. Those students who have gotten gold at IMO, all of those students are art of problem solving students. They have all spent dozens and dozens and dozens of hours on our site, taking our courses, engaging with the community there. And so I really look at that as proof of concept, like nailed down, right? That when you teach math in a kind of rote, conventional cookbook style approach, the results might not be what you want them to be. But when you take that problem solving based approach to mathematics, it's not even just that we're raising the ceiling. I almost think of it as like we're removing the ceiling. There's literally no limit to the heights that students can reach in terms of creativity, perseverance, making connections, developing new knowledge on the fly, these kinds of things. So I think that really is a testament, even though that's a very, very small number of students that participate in that IMO. If you take that as the starting point, and then expand outward, right? Like a shift towards this way of doing, thinking, teaching, talking about math. I believe that if we snapped our fingers and every student in elementary school across the country was engaging with Beast Academy at a level that's appropriate for them, and then we were to carry that forward, and then 10 years from now, look at what our PISA rankings would be, I'm convinced that we would be number one in the world, or like right up there.
Sounds like we need to make that happen. I think that's awesome. What piece of advice would you give to a math teacher, families, students, just about the importance of problem solving and getting started with it?
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, don't be afraid. Right. There's
don't be scared of math.
don't be scared. Right. There's room for everyone, irrespective of what your starting point is. Everyone can become an expert problem solver. And there are so many resources and so much guidance and so much mentorship to be imparted to students who want to go on this journey, and for the parents and teachers who believe in that journey and then want to walk that road with their children. And that's something that we can help with. We're certainly not the only ones that are doing this as well. But when it comes to a couple different settings here, right? So like in homes, it doesn't even necessarily need to start with mathematics. It can start with interesting puzzles, right? Like that can be a gateway into this world as well. So spark curiosity in the home, have interesting kitchen table conversations with your children about like, like, look at this puzzle. Where would you start if we were going to solve this puzzle? And then make it a dialogue, right? So that's why we're so big on puzzles as well, is that it's not intuitively obvious as to like what steps you need to take at the outset or where you even need to start. And even just engaging in that conversation can be so helpful because it gets the gears moving, right? And then that math, it's modeling, right? So this idea of like explaining whatever is going on in your mind, whatever gears are turning there, putting voice to that, putting words to that, and then having that conversation. Oh, when I'm looking at this puzzle, I think I should start over here. Oh, that's interesting. Why do you think you should start over there? Well, because I see that I need to unlock this next piece. And I think that if I start over here, that's going to give me my best shot at unlocking this next piece. Oh, that's really interesting. Let's try that and see if you're right. And then if you're right, great, you can keep building. And if you're wrong, great, you can keep building, right? And then say, okay, that didn't work. What else can we try? What should we try differently, right? And you can have those same kinds of modeling conversations in the classroom as well. In fact, we believe one of the most important things, like an indicator, if you will, that a math classroom looks and feels right to us is that it's noisy, right? That students aren't necessarily just independently working quietly on their own, struggling to find a correct answer. We believe in paired work or small group work. We do a lot of this in our learning centers where students can help and build and grow with one another because they are contributing to solving a problem together and collaboratively. So the conversation either in the homes or in the classroom can be such a meaningful addition and a way of changing the script on what math can and should feel like.
You were talking about how you have conversations as students are thinking about the problems. And what I've noticed, so I have two daughters and one son, and both of the two daughters and the son are phenomenal mathematicians. And I think the change for them was from a young age, the girls talked out math. And I went to an all-girls school and I taught at an all-girls school. So, you know, my focus has always been like, why are girls not succeeding in math and science? It just doesn't make sense. We are bright. I know we're bright. Like, why aren't we? And what I've noticed is when you do a lot of this metacognition with students where you're saying like, where would you start? Okay, well, that didn't work. Where else could you start? Why didn't that work? And so you're getting at these questions that they can internalize. And for whatever reason, some girls really need that language-based approach while they're learning. And then when you were talking about the math competitions, this is phenomenal to me. So I was thinking of, gosh, there is something to math like language where in America, we are just at the stages of learning phonics, how to, the breakdown of words. We haven't gotten to fluency. Fluency is when you're reading so naturally, right? And these people who can succeed at math so well, it's because they don't have to think about the building blocks anymore. They're just fluent in the language, if that makes sense. And what you're saying is if we start at the building block level instead of breaking down into algorithms and memorized computations, it's almost like you're dropping them in a foreign country and allowing them to problem solve out learning the language instead of giving them a vocabulary sheet of that language and they're memorizing vocabulary.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We believe in the power of that approach eminently. And to be honest, that's why we created the graphic novel concept for Beast Academy, because we believe that the earlier that you introduce these habits of mind and habits of thought to students, the easier it will be for them to become fluent, right? It's just like any other language. Math is a language. It's a language that models the world around us. And sure, I could learn to speak French. I could seek out to, you know, start that journey for myself this month if I wanted to. But it's going to be more challenging for me now than it would have been if I was introduced to the language when I was a very young child. Mathematics is really no different, and problem-solving mathematics especially is no different. So modeling is a central fixture of our approach, which allows for that deeper conceptual understanding. And that graphic novel approach, that's the unlock for that. It's not about just giving students access to brightly colored comic book pages that pique their interest and get them excited about whatever the lesson might have in store. That, don't get me wrong, is a part of it for sure, because it doesn't matter how well-intentioned, researcher designed an approach is. If students aren't excited about doing it, it's as if you've never made it in the first place. But the most important thing about this graphic novel approach in Beast Academy is that the characters are talking to each other. They're encountering really interesting, non-routine novel problems that don't have a cookie cutter path to solution. And when they encounter these problems, they're going to talk. One character might say to another, I'm not sure where to start, but what if we tried this? And then another character might chime in and say, I can see why you think that, but I don't think that's going to work because, and then maybe they try it and maybe, or maybe they try something else. But what happens with that process or this way of introducing math to students in a different way is that now students start to see math and build a relationship with math that is fundamentally different from the way it was probably taught to them previously, that math is all about rules, it's about following steps, it's about just like blindly applying some things that you've memorized to get to an answer and then moving on. And instead, the Beast Academy students almost start to think of math the way that a mathematician might. Right? Not that it's not necessarily a black and white right or wrong discipline, but it's a discipline that has a lot of nuance and a lot of room for creativity and gray area and trying different things and learning from them, whether you got it right or you did not. The beauty of mathematics, like the art of it all, right? So that to me, I think is one of the coolest and really most inspiring things as an educator myself, to see students begin to walk down that road where they're now, they have a different experience and a different journey with math, because first and foremost, learn to love it because it becomes more fun, more interesting, more exciting. But the way that they think changes, the way that they talk about math changes. It's a lot more meaningful and it's a lot deeper.
Well, the art of problem solving. The title is genius. I cannot thank you enough for coming here. You're heroes to my daughter, but as a mom and a teacher, you all are heroes to me, truly. It's a joy to speak with you. How can listeners get in touch?
Two places in particular for the younger students out there, like the elementary aged, you can get connected with us just by going to beastacademy.com. For all of the students who are, let's say, beyond the elementary math journey or moment, and we're into like middle school and high school and things of this nature, artofproblemsolving.com. And then for any of the teachers out there who might be interested in what could we do with Art of Problem Solving? What could we do to bring some of these experiences into the classrooms at our school? You can just drop us an email. And that would be schools@artofproblemsolving.com.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
It's been so cool just hearing the journey of Art of Problem Solving, where you guys started off, the trajectory, the impact, and like you said, the potential now, the best is yet to come. This is by no far like the peak. You're just going to keep going. And it's just so exciting. As someone who was a little math phobic back in the day, I wish I had something like this, because I don't think I would have ever developed that fear of math and that fear of failing and that fear of, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. So thank you for what you do. It's been a pleasure to chat with you.
And it's for just one last word. It's so funny you say that, because that's what we all say at AAB, that we make the resources we wish we had when we were kids. And thankfully, now that we're adults, we have an opportunity to make these resources so that other kids can have them.
We hope today's episode has inspired you. Will you take a moment to share it with a friend?
NCAGT provides you with resources like this podcast. Please find us on social media or visit our website at ncagt.org to learn more.
Please note, the thoughts and ideas shared in this podcast are as diverse as our guests, not always reflecting the official NCAGT stance. Until next time, stay curious and keep learning, because we can't just hope they'll be fine.